Welcome to The Squid of Despair, unscripted musings on business life, leadership, creativity, transformation, and all the myriad of other work-life events that get in the way of a good night's sleep. Hosted by David Ayling Smith and Peter Taylor.
Well, here we are again. Hello, Daz.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I've just come back from sunny Florida, so I'm feeling pretty positive. And I know you like to talk about my my latest book, but actually my last book has just made it through to the finals of a Business Book of the Year award. So I'm getting there in early because I know what
that
you're
sounds, like. That sounds like a black tie event, Peter. Can I come?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll book a table for two. Or two places on a table. That's probably a better way of saying it.
Was that the book that had a really good chapter on change management in it?
It was written by yourself, so well done for that.
Yeah. Well, no, congratulations. When's that going to be made public?
Well, it's public now, and then the actual awards evening is September the 19th, I think, something like that.
Well, I don't want to top your story, but you know I like topping your stories. Well, yes. You and I have got something else to celebrate, and actually I did ping you this earlier this year that we've made the top 10 podcasts on squids in 2024.
We found ourselves a niche category.
I know.
The top 10.
it's a great list, actually. So we are in the top 10 of podcasts on squids, and that includes Squid Game, which actually is at number one.
Oh, that would be,
yeah. A treatise on cephalopods, which I think is number two. And I think we come in at number four. So well done, Peter.
Woo-hoo! Oh, squids are us. Fantastic. Well, congratulations to both of us.
Yeah. Well, so as is our running order at the moment, so I get to choose again, don't I?
You do. Okay, here we go. Here we go again. Enthusiasm in voice. Daz, what is Squid of the Day?
Well, you remember last time we did sisu, which was a non-English word to sort of describe grit, yep, determination and resilience. And I really like that theme, that there are non-English words out there that describe sort of the quintessential agony of the human condition in a way that's better than the English words. So I've continuing that theme. And
well, that sounds like there could be a book in this.
I'm hoping.
Words that the English doesn't have.
So this week I'm going for mojo. Okay. And you will know the phrase, Peter, about losing your mojo or finding your mojo. And I want to tell you a little personal story because I, as you know, I wasn't very well last month. And, you know, I'm blessed with good health and, you know, I'm fine now, but I sort of lost my mojo for a week. And it made me reflect on how important that was for me. And I thought then for everybody. So I did a little bit of reading on it and it was a fascinating subject. And so I wanted to talk about mojo today.
All right. Okay. I can support you on that. And it's interesting. Yeah, because it's one of those words we use it. Well, not all the time. We use it quite a lot, but it's a funny word, isn't it, mojo?
It is funny. And
I want to tell me the origin, are you?
I will give you some definition. Before we go there, I also, you know, thinking about this, I came up with some other words that actually I wouldn't have minded doing as well. And so do you have any favourites, Peter? Any non-English words that sort of describe something quintessential about being human that's better than the English phrase? Have you got any favourites?
Well, yeah, you know, taxi doesn't count, does it? So
no.
I do actually. I think when we talked a while back, actually, because there's a lovely, I'm not really sure it is a game really, but it's H-Y-G-G-E, hoog.
Oh, yeah, that's the Danish word, isn't it?
Yes, and it means cozy, contented mood, brought on by kind of comfort, conviviality, and just, I don't know, it's kind of like a social word.
Yeah, yeah.
The game or the cars are really interesting for stimulating conversation, and so that's definitely one word I put out there.
I like that one, and in fact, the Welsh have one. So as you know, my daughter-in-law is Welsh, and so cwtch in Welsh means a hug. But it also can mean a sort of a cozy room as well. So I'm wondering whether that's the Welsh version of hoogie.
It could be.
Yeah.
Words. I love the wibbly wobbly for jelly and poppity ping for microwave.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the German language is fantastic for this sort of thing. You know, we've talked about this before. My favourite, I think, is Schadenfreude. You know, the which is the German phrase for taking pleasure from the misfortune of a friend. I think.
It's the rename of this podcast, I feel, possibly.
Yeah, no, I like that one. One of the other ones I like, which is the French have a sort of, they often overlay they over often overlay their aphorisms with a sort of a philosophical bent. And it's, forgive my pronunciation for any French listeners, but l'esprit d'escalier, which is basically translates as the spirit of the stairs. And what it means is to leave a conversation thinking about everything you should have said, which I really like, because that happens frequently to me.
Interesting,
I
interesting.
like that.
I've
And
got
you
a question for you there. A question for you. How many times have we finished recording the podcast and then afterwards you've gone, oh, I could have said that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's l'esprit d'escalier. That's what's going on there.
Whoa, okay.
And how the Dutch love idioms, and you and I have worked with some fantastic Dutch colleagues and friends. But have you noticed how often monkeys come up? So,
No, I haven't actually.
oh,
No.
well, fantastic. I
Okay.
mean, ask any Dutch people what monkey up the sleeve means, and it's wonderful. The one, my particular favorite though, is the monkey in the post room. So, I had some Dutch colleagues that. And it's a Dutch phrase, and I'm not going to attempt that on sort of live podcast, but what it means when you get into a situation and it's a complete chaotic mess, they say it's like a monkey in the post room. I've always liked that one.
Oh, there was another one. Weren't we sharing one something about like, you won't take me in the post in the morning or some strange phrase like that, I
That's
think.
well, yeah, but yeah, monkeys though. Look
Monkeys.
it up.
All right,
There's a
sorry,
lot.
back to monkeys. Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot on monkeys. Anyway,
There
so
is there, well,
Mojo,
actually,
yeah.
you're right. There's one in the brand new Lazy Project Manager, actually.
Oh, the brand new project manager, Peter. Is this a plug?
This is a plug for a yet to be finished book. Well, it'll be finished very shortly. Out next year, available in all good bookstores, etc. It's Swedish, and the phrase is lagom or lagom, or I'm trying to get into Swedish accent. Word, 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 lagom. I don't know. Lagom. Sorry, every Swedish person out there.
Okay.
And the reason it's in the book, because it's about lazy project manager, productive laziness, it means just the right amount, right balance, moderation. So summary is going to be like not too little, not too much, just right. Kind of like the Goldilocks
Oh
phrase. So
yeah.
there you
No,
go. There's
very
another one.
good. You probably need a good a good preface for your new book, don't you, Peter?
Here we go. You're plugging it. You've done it already. And I've improved it.
Oh, good. Well,
Yeah.
you mean
Got nicer
ChatGPT
things.
has
I've got
improved.
nicer things about me.
Oh, thank you, Peter. Thank you for doing my homework.
That's okay. No,
Anyway,
you will get to review it. Are we going to get on?
let's go on to Mojo. So, Mojo. So, we know the phrase. Finding your mojo, losing your mojo. So it's an African word actually. It comes from an African language, Fulan, and it gained prominence in the southern US sort of states through the Creole language at the beginning of last century. And it really translates as personal magic or influence or power. And in common usage today, and it is used today, it's all about, being on your game, isn't it? Having energy, having confidence. You've got your mojo back, or you found your mojo. But
Okay,
as I
yeah.
said, earlier, I was unwell. I had a week of not feeling great, and I felt like I lost my mojo in the sense that my enthusiasm wasn't there, my optimism wasn't there. Everything looked a bit grey. I wasn't depressed, but it was a very unusual state for me, and so I think. I reflected losing your mojo isn't comfortable. Well, I didn't find it comfortable. You have low energy, no excitement, no curiosity. It's like having an enthusiasm bypass and can't find motivation in the things that normally bring you happiness and joy. And I read around that and I saw this great definition where it said that, when you're on your game and you found your mojo, you have all those positive attributes that I described. At the other end of that curve, there is depression, which, is something that afflicts many people, and lots of people in their lives dip in and out of depression, and that's just, it's a thing and it's serious. And we talk a lot about that through the focus on mental health, I would say. The premise was that losing your mojo actually puts you often in a middle state, which they described as languishing. And I like that because, you've got mojo when you're on your game, you've got the If you like the level below that, you're languishing. And when you're languishing, you're not depressed, but you're not great. Everything looks a bit grey. Everything feels a bit hard work. And I saw that described actually as the neglected middle ground of mental health. So depression is a thing we talk a lot about, but we don't talk much about languishing, about that sort of state of inertia. when you just don't have that in an enthusiasm.
So
And
can I interject to that, Mike? Because that it's an interesting word. I mean, and actually, I've had a couple of calls this week where we have, as groups, we've challenged words that we're using about what they really mean. And language is a really, if you said to me, Peter described languishing, I would have probably given you some sort of definition along the lines of some kind of conscious decision to luxuriate, to
yes.
enjoy the moment. And
Yeah, well, you're thinking sun.
in a very positive, controlling way.
You're thinking of sun lounges. You've just come back from Florida, so you're thinking sun lounges and something pink with an umbrella
Oh,
in it, aren't you?
absolutely. I love my
Yeah.
mate.
No,
Thank
you're
you.
right. Languishing has a positive connotation when it's a relaxing
Yeah, okay.
activity. I
I
think.
wouldn't have seen it as a negative thing. So it's interesting you put that forward.
Yeah, and in fact, I have talked to a couple of people about it, and they've also had an issue with that particular word, but. And okay, we might need to find another word for it, but I like the fact that we can label something that I feel I went through, and I think lots of people go through this. And I think the good news about languishing, perhaps as opposed to depression, is that there are very active steps you can take to stop languishing. No silver bullet. I mean, we're all different, don't we? We all have different triggers, and we have different passions and sensitivities. And there's not This is not a prescriptive intervention here, but I think there are things that you can do if you're languishing, if you accept my definition of languishing, that does improve mental health. And I think it's a case of finding the right one for you. So I thought we could go through it. I've got some lists for you, Peter.
Oh,
And
excellent. This guy, I love a list.
I know you do. And so I've got lots of lists for you. And I want this to come across as sort of something that it's sort of personally motivated, but I think it might resonate with people because I suspect it's a state that people find themselves in periodically. And I want to be optimistic about the fact that, you can get out of it and there's some things you can do. And the relevance to a business podcast is the fact that I think this happens to people at work sometimes. It's interesting. This has sort of a bit of a more of a psychological flavor, isn't it? This Squid of Despair. And I sort of wondered about that, but it touches on themes that we've covered before. So, Squid of Despair 22, we did Sisu. Squid of Despair 18, we did resilience. 13, we did hope. 12, we did imposter syndrome. And 8, we did optimism. And 4, we did fun at work. You remember that? And actually, this touches all of those. So I felt I was onto something here, Peter, as a sort of a it's a human condition that we arrive at in our lives that actually we can exert positive control over by doing certain things. And so I thought that might be useful for some people and might be
Okay.
interesting to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Clearly, your mastermind subject is Squid of Despair podcast 2022 onwards. But yeah, I'm very impressed. I imagine you have a list there.
I did. I had to look that up. But I, because I was, as I was sort of thinking about my notes for this, I was thinking about, well, we talked about this before. When did we talk about this before? So there we go. So do you want my macro list? Should
Look
we
forward to a
start?
list. I look forward to discussion. I mean, are you going to cover? I just want to kind of see where we're going with this to give myself a chance of responding. But I mean, are you going to cover? Presumably one can naturally leave languishing through time and whatever. Other people, you're more talking about, if you like, elevating yourself or resurrecting yourself out of the languishing state.
I am. I'm suggesting that, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about what it feels like to be in that state. But I'm going to suggest that once you're in that state, before sort of the macro level is connect with the situation you're in, then ways through it is I'm going to propose connecting with others, connecting with yourself, and then connecting with the future you aspire to. And you can see from those sort of top level sort of signposts. We've talked about all of those before in different ways, but this is as a sort of result of losing my mojo, finding my mojo again, and how did I do that? And I'm not proposing I'm special here, but having done a bit of research on it, I recognize that these are tried and tested techniques that have been helpful for other people too. So
Okay, all right, I look forward.
let's start with this and
Sure.
connecting with the situation. So, I think actually any sort of mental health healing or challenges you address starts with the recognition. So you know how it's very famous that in Alcoholics Anonymous, my understanding is they start many meetings is, my name is Joe and I'm an alcoholic. That sort of it's quite a famous phrasing, isn't it? That they I believe they used to use it. I don't know if they still use it, but have you heard of that before, Peter?
I am, and I love your clever work, your careful words around it. I understand, I believe, but no, I agree. And how true that actually is, but I mean, that's what we've seen in films and television. Yes.
Yeah, and so you know, there's an acknowledgement there of the situation or the problem, which allows an engagement with it. There are others, you know. I remember sort of when my kids were younger and they were tired and hungry, and we had the phrase in the family, "hangry." You know, so
Oh,
get
yeah.
the hangry. I don't know if that's a phrase that's prevalent, but we had that phrase. And actually, you know, it was helpful to talk to them about the fact that, you know, you're irritable because you're hungry. You're not irritable because you're irritable, and therefore address the hunger and this will go away. Another example close at home, you know, when you whistle in queues, I
Yes.
know it's because you're bored. And because you're bored and you're whistling, I don't get irritated anymore. But, you know, I had to work through that.
Anymore. Oh, we wait. We're going to travel again soon, I'm sure.
It's a habit of perhaps naming your feelings. It allows you to understand it a bit better and give you a bit of a reflective distance. So I think the first thing is sort of, you know, spot the fact you're languishing and you know, tell yourself, okay, I'm languishing. What's going to happen now? And then I think the next stage is sort of accept it, really. You know, you see people going through the various stages of denial or grief or surprise, rage. None of that changes anything, actually. It might be necessary to go through it, but I think with a lot of mental health stuff, what you focus on tends to grow. Yeah, think of it as a door. You've accepted it, you've walked through it, and actually, you know, I recognize this is uncomfortable, so you have to deal with it. And we talked about this during the resilience podcast. You know, a lot of people draw on stoicism, don't they, when they're at a tough time to prevail.
Yeah.
Either your favorite, you remember Julian of Norwich? Remember, you were very taken with her. You know, some people
I
use
love
faith.
Mrs. Julian of Norwich, yeah.
Some people use logic when they're under pressure, but I think at the heart of stoicism, which is sort of I think a technique lots of people use, it's one I use myself, is it's the premise that, you know, external things are not the problem, it's your response to them that's the problem. And so it's sort of trying to use logic to defuse the emotion in a situation. You can't control events, but you can control your reaction to events. And so making yourself rationally look at this situation you're in, it's hard, but I think it really helps. And so I think, you know, stoicism tends to break down things into it breaks down the situation into elements that sort of you can focus on, so the emotional elements disappear. So I think that's probably the second thing I would say, sort of accept the situation.
Okay.
And by the way, sort of a health warning here. I think languishing can lead to depression and despair. And I think if people feel like that they're at that point, you know, with their work or their relationship, you know, get help. This isn't, you know, this isn't this is I'm not qualified to sort of go here really. So I just want to recognize the fact that I'm talking about that middle ground where I think we actually as individuals can do something about it. But I think a lot of people do suffer in other ways, which needs help. And you know, some situations are toxic, aren't you? You just need to leave them. So I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the milder form of dysfunctionality that we all found ourselves landing in every now and again. Does that make sense?
Well, I will make sure there is a very clear disclaimer in the show notes. Don't worry. Can I go back to recognition then before you continue? I mean, because it's a business podcast. But I think we've both seen it in the past. But this kind of languishing, well, you said I get bored about things. But the danger in business, particularly, I think, is if you're doing the same thing repeatedly, and that's not what normally excites you, shall we say. That to enter the languishing state is a quite a dangerous thing career-wise, I feel, in the sense you can just become overly comfortable in it. I mean, it's not my word love on or leg on or whatever. It's not that. It's not hygge. It's not that comfortability. It's a kind of unproductive state.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and I think it also can lead to you not, you know, not bothering, not trying, losing effort. So I think, you know, your performance can go down from a work, if we're talking it from a work perspective, you know, you don't engage with people so much because you're not interested so much. No, I think it's a slippery slope. Absolutely. You know, that's, you know, it's sort of languishing describes it, you know, there's no ebbs and flows in the day, you know, there's no color. You're sort of multitasking without concentrating anything on particular. You're sort of, I think you're sort of your responses to things get dull, don't they? Because you know, all of this perpetuates that languishing state. And I remember actually when lockdown started, and you developed a practice, didn't you? A personal practice of going out and working in a Costa, for half a day, or going for a walk. And I think that taught me something, actually. There's something about building a rhythm and a dynamic to your day, building variety. And I think if you expose yourself during the day to sort of small positives and small negatives, you sort of somehow increase, the zest of the everyday experience, don't you? It's not
Yeah,
all
I mean,
the same.
I created projects for effectively. I mean, obviously, I did the book. We won't talk about any more about books, but that was one project. The other project I did was I just printed out a huge map of the whole Sandhurst area, and I walked every street path and road in Sandhurst over a series about 3 weeks, I think it was, and realized how much distance there was. But for me, it was like creating a project that had a beginning and an end, and that's what excites me in life, really.
Yeah, no, well, that's great. I hold on to that thought. I'm going to come back to that about recognizing your passions. And
Okay.
so this is about sort of just talking about connecting with the situation and be present with what you're doing. And you're going to love this because these are idiotic sentences, but I really like them. So, when you're working, work. When you're resting, rest. When you're playing with the kids, play with the kids. It's about the focus on what you're doing. And we talked about sort of the mindfulness of actually being engaged in the moment. But I think if you find yourself languishing, I think these are great ways to start thinking about how you can move on by actually focusing on what you're doing and create color in your day, I would say.
That's
Make
very
sense?
spooky because I observed out my window today that I don't actually know what my neighbour does for a living, or I might say which neighbour it is either. But he was out there playing with his two kids with a headpiece in on a call, and it's like, it's kind of like he wasn't present in either of those situations.
And we've all done it, of course, because of our time pressures. But it's so interesting when you sometimes step back and look at yourself, you think, why on earth did I do that? But anyway, so that was sort of point one, connect with the situation. Point two, I'm going to suggest connecting with others is very helpful when you're languishing. And this may be my experience, but I think to increase your own happiness, making someone else happy, perhaps by practicing small acts of kindness, is very therapeutic. And I don't know whether that's just me. And large acts of kindness clearly work, altruistic acts, charitable giving, spending your talents on something you're passionate about. That's all very important for lots of people and very worthy. But I also think small acts of kindness are really good. And silly things like, letting people out in a queue of traffic, making time to chat with someone when actually you don't have time, offer a compliment, grab a coffee. I mean, you do that all the time, Peter. So, you're very good at this. But
For
make
listeners, I
contact.
don't do it all the time. I do it some of the
But
time, and I do lots and lots of work as well.
I think we're social animals, and I think making connections with someone we know, we don't know, especially when schedules are full, I think is very helpful. I think, creating connections, personal connections, new friends, I think that's a very strong antidote to languishing. I don't know whether you'd agree with that.
Yeah, I do agree. Yes.
Okay, so there we go. We've got connection with the situation, connecting with others. Next one would be, I would say, connect with yourself. And that's where you were going with that previous statement. Stop and think, what makes you tick? What's your passions? What's your values? What's your interests? How do you spend more of your time doing this? And another something I've noticed with my sort of coaching past, I often see, well, not often, I periodically see people trying to live to someone else's standards, that or live someone else's life for them, if that makes sense. I think that's a major source of languaging for some people, where they're not actually living their own life. I think sometimes you languish because you're not living your life, you're living someone else's life, or you're living the life of the people you're working for, perhaps. And I think you need to have a look at that, because I think that's a major cause of frustration and languishing. And I would say the way you do that is there's a little technique here, and you're gonna like this because this is semi-numerical, Peter, and this is a coaching trick. But list the things you enjoy doing. That could be from reading to, whitewater rafting, whatever it is. Rate them, so I really like doing that, I quite like doing that, I like doing that less, but I still like doing it. Score how present they are in your life. score how able you are to do them, and then figure out what you need to do to change things around so you're doing more of what gives you joy and passion. And challenge, and then you know, then challenge yourself to do something new. And I think, you know, by connecting with yourself in those different ways, I think that's a strong path out of languishing if you find yourself there.
I think that's quite constructive. Yeah.
Are you busy making a list? I'd love
no,
to
I was
see...
on another call, sorry.
I'd love to see your list, you know, 1 to 10 of what brings you joy. I think I know number one, but
you know, yeah, you met her.
That's right. So there we go. So connecting with the situation, connecting with others, connecting with yourself. And then sort of to pull it together, how do you sort of connect with the future you want for yourself? And we've talked a little bit about this in the past, but I think it's about, you know, thinking about the goals you're excited about. I think nothing gives, again, this might be personal, but I think nothing gives more meaning than connecting to a larger goal. We see that at work, don't we? You know, that we talk about BHAGs at work, but I think from a personal point of view, I think there are big goals that are very invigorating. And we talked in the past about, you know, think about, I mean, this is very big. It doesn't have to be big, but you know, think legacy. Think, what do you want the kids to remember you for? What positive change do you want to make to the organization you work for? I think all of these things are ways to connect with a future that perhaps you can't see when you're languishing. And there's a fantastic tool that's used in the coaching world. Have you ever heard the Japanese word ikigai? In fact, it's one I wondered about doing. Japanese word for ikigai means really reason to live. Iki meaning to live and gai meaning reason. And it's a way, it's a technique, it's basically the ikigai diagram. It's imagine a Venn diagram with four interlocking circles. Can you picture that, Peter?
Give me a chance. Yeah, okay, it's there.
Yeah, so they're, you know, they're four, if you like, four interlocking circles at the corner so that they all interlock. So there's, I can't do the maths quickly, but there's, you know, there's six or seven interactions between two of them, and, you know, there's one between all of them. Mm-hmm. And one of the circles is labeled what you love doing. One of the circles is labeled what you're good at. One of the circles is labeled what does the world need now? And one of the circles is labeled what does the world pay for? And this is a technique that's actually often used. But what's so interesting in those, you know, intersections between like what you love doing and what you're good at, you'll find your job. Actually, that's the wrong intersection, but you know what I mean. And in these intersections, you find jobs, passions, calling, mission. And I think, you know, to do this work on yourself and contemplate those intersections is really helpful to find out where it would be good for your soul to go and explore those, or be good for your career to go and explore those. So I think that's a very helpful thing. But a warning, I mean, this is a lifetime's work, right? This just doesn't happen overnight. But I think it's worth the effort. I think it's worth finding a goal or identifying a mission that, you know, you can energize, lift your spirits, you know, give yourself a powerful way to put languishing behind you. And like the project world, you know, we've talked before about small wins, the importance of small wins, because some of these long-term goals can feel a bit remote. But, you know, small wins to bolster confidence, build a sense of momentum and agency, I think that's all very helpful. And we talk about that a lot in projects, don't we, Peter?
Yes, we do. Yeah, we do. It's about identifying that there is momentum, there is motion, there is progression in this, without, you know, waiting for the big milestone that's not going to happen for another, you know, 2-3 months.
Yeah, that's right. So I think, you know, just to bring this to a close, I think having an understanding of what you're good at, what brings you joy, what the world needs, and therefore you can contribute to, and what does the world pay for? So how do you monetize it? I think are all techniques to sort of help you move out of a languishing state. I think the other one is development, self-development. I think, you know, progressing against a goal is very invigorating. I think thinking about a legacy is very invigorating. And I think so is being masterful about something, learning something where you become expert. Because, you know, when you do something well, when you're performing something challenging that asks you to fully concentrate, you know, that sense of flow you get, you know, being in the zone. I can think of
Yes, I mean,
sporting
it's almost like,
metaphors.
yes, you kind of, yes, it kind of just takes over. I mean, I get that when I do sort of keynotes that are going well. It's not out of body experience, but it's like, it's almost like, well, that's someone doing a great job on stage, and oh, it happens to be me.
Yeah, that's right. You're fully immersed, aren't you, in that task at
Yes,
hand?
yeah.
And I think that's a fantastic antidote to languishing. And I mean, in my world, it's like fishing, you know, the perfect forehand, solving a chess puzzle, you know, things that I can't do any of those things and think about anything else. And paradoxically, although they're sort of mentally challenging, they're extremely relaxing. And so for me personally, and we all have those. And so find what they are for you, would be my suggestion. And there you've got a path out of languishing. So there you go, Peter. Languishing, I
Oh,
think, is
okay.
something that, you know, assails us all from time to time. I certainly had it a few weeks ago and sort of got out of it, and out of it just thinking about those steps and techniques. So, you know, just connecting with the situation, connecting with others, connecting with myself, and the connecting with a future state, and came through it. And you know, I recommend it as a process for people.
Well, I'm glad you're back. We missed you.
Well, hopefully it wasn't that obvious. My goodness.
It's always yes. When I think it, well, I think it also down to the sort of person. If someone is, you're hyper, well, not hyper engaged, you're very well, strongly engaged. You care, you engage with people, and etc. And if you know if that's, I think there are certain indicators in some people that it's just more obvious when the mojo's gone. Other people, it's probably harder to tell, but it doesn't mean it's not there.
Yes, but I would argue that, you know, everyone has their A game. You know, everyone has moments when they're feeling on top of things and moments when they're not. And that, you know, when you're not on on your game and life becomes harder, I think there's some self-care here that, you know, people can apply irrespective of, you know, how they're manifesting themselves. I'm sure we all move up and down that sort of mental health continuum at work and at home. And so and apologies to our listeners if this was a bit sort of coaching heavy, but I just think I think everyone is impacted by this sort of changes in emotional state, and I think it's helpful to talk about it. That's my premise. We will see from our listener figures whether this is
Well, if
one of
we
the
climb
flops
to
or
number one in the Squid podcast charts, we'll know.
yes, exactly. So there you go, Peter. That's my
Right? No, thank
contribution.
you. Thank you very much. I don't, well, I know it's down to you to choose subjects, but we talked a lot about coaching during that one. So whether that is a future topic, I don't know, because
Well, I think everyone should have a coach, actually, and my rates are very reasonable if anyone's interested.
I may change from me plugging my books, you're now plugging your coaching services. Well
righty.
We've all got
Thanks,
bills. We've
Peter.
all got
Thank you
bills to
for
pay.
indulging me.
Okay. No, my pleasure. Thank you very much for sharing. I think it's a good one. I will attempt to make some show notes and summary out of this one. Listeners, do send in your strange foreign words that mean something special.
There we go. Very good. Talk to you next time, Peter.
All right. Thanks a lot. Bye then.
Bye.
You've been listening to an unusual podcast from David Ayling Smith and Peter Taylor. More information can be found at www.squidofdespair.com.